Good morning, y'all. We are on lesson number 6, and we are going to finish up what we started last week talking about investing, and that will be the end of our little mini-series on things that you can do with your money. Before we do that, I'm just going to give one plug for something that I found really helpful when I was first starting out right after college, getting married and all, and it was this book right here, Personal Finance for Dummies. The Dummies books, I think, have been really pretty good, and this one was really nice to have. It talks all about savings and investing and things we won't get into here, like insurance and mortgages and rent and all kinds of stuff. Lydia and I used this book referencing a lot of stuff when we were first married, and I just found it really helpful. So it's about $10, $15 on Amazon. So if you want to know more about stuff we're talking about, you're always welcome to ask me or whatever. But this book in particular I found really helpful. So Personal Finance for Dummies, you may want to consider it. Could someone hit the lights there? Just both of them. And we are going to pick up with what we were talking about last week. Here's our triangle one more time about the different types of places you can put your money, ranging from the things that are very safe down there, savings, bonds, and all the way up to things that are, you know, much more risky. However, your potential of making money is also going to be quite a bit more as you go up the triangle. So we're not going to cover bonds and savings. We're not going to do exotics anymore. We're just going to focus today on stocks, mutual funds, and index funds, because that is going to be where most of your investing life is going to be spent. Throughout the years, you're going to be doing probably not stocks so much, but probably mutual funds, index funds. So that's what we're going to look at today. Help yourself to coffee if you want and stuff while we're talking. I won't be offended at all. All right, so just to recap what these three guys are. Stocks. When you have a share of stock, you have got ownership of a company, right? You buy a share of Google, you now have become the partial owner of Google. You and a bajillion other people now own Google. So your ownership really isn't going to make a whole lot of difference in where the company goes. But your fortunes will be tied with Google now. Whether it goes up or down, that's going to be what's going to happen with your money. So when people buy stock, if people decide they're going to invest in a company, they're generally going to do it for one of two reasons. You might buy stock in a company if you think that company is going to grow. If you think the revenues are going to go up, you think it's going to be really profitable soon, maybe you've got a small company, and Google's not a small company, but if it was a small search engine, you thought it was really going to do well, going to get a lot of advertising revenue, you might buy Google because it's going to get big. And as it gets big, it's going to get more profitable. That's a growth stock. The other time you might buy something is if you think a stock is undervalued. For instance, last year, JetBlue was a real high-flying superstar stock. It was a new discount airline. They were doing really well for themselves. But they had a fiasco last year where they left people sitting on a plane in the cold somewhere in, I don't remember where it was, Minnesota or something, and they left them there on the tarmac for about 7 hours. And they were mad, and they got a lot of bad press, and it was a terrible situation for JetBlue. And it was really bad, and people started selling the stock big time. Now, an investor might have looked at that and said, you know what, this is a terrible thing for JetBlue, but their core business hasn't really changed. And as bad as it is right now for them, I think they're going to be able to weather this storm. I think they're going to come out on it on the other side. In time, people will forgive them. They'll go on with their business, maybe, maybe not, but you might think that anyway. So you might say to yourself, I think the stock market is really punishing JetBlue right now, but I think they're going to come back. So in a sense, JetBlue's stock is on sale at the moment. People have been beaten on it and pushed it down. Maybe you think it doesn't deserve to be down there, so you buy it because it's a value stock. It's on sale. You think it's going to go back up to its regular price, and you'll make money on that. So those are the two kinds of stocks that you might buy, or that someone might buy, and I got to keep track of this. So that's what stocks are. Mutual funds are a basket of stocks all together in one package. You just buy one thing and you've got a collection of stocks now. Maybe it's 10, maybe it's 10,000 different stocks. And all the stocks that are in there are going to be managed by someone who is a professional money manager. They are going to be deciding what's going to be in that mutual fund on a day-to-day basis. They will be buying and selling all the time. So you're going to just, you'll own your share of mutual fund, but what's actually in that fund will depend on what the money manager decides. He's going to look at what he thinks is really hot right now, get rid of what he thinks is really going down. He's going to take care of that for you. So that is a mutual fund. This kind of mutual fund is called an active fund. An actively managed fund. It has a professional at the helm. He's making all the decisions about that mutual fund. And you're just along for the ride. An index fund is a passively managed fund. So whereas a mutual fund that we talked about earlier has a manager doing it, an index fund buys only those stocks that are going to be part of whatever index we're going to be following. So if you've got the Dow Jones, it's got 30 stocks in it, then your index fund is going to own exactly those 30 stocks, no more, no less. Nobody's going to be deciding what to buy and sell. It's going to be run by computer, more or less. So there's no active management going on. You're just going to follow whatever the Dow Jones does. If the Dow Jones goes up 2% today, then you're going to go up 2%. Minus a tiny bit for commissions and stuff like that. But pretty much, if it goes up, you'll go up. If it goes down, you'll go down. You're just going to follow that index wherever it goes. So that is the difference between index funds, mutual funds, and stocks. Now, does that kind of make sense? That's just sort of the groundwork for the rest of this. But does that more or less make sense about how those work? Okay, if you have any questions, feel free to ask them anywhere along the way. All right. So, just a reminder from last week that we mentioned, these guys are kind of high up on the pyramid, remember. So stocks, mutual funds, and index funds are volatile, and they are risky over the short term. I cannot tell you in 2008 whether the stock market is going to be up or down. It may be way up next year. It may be in the toilet next year, and I don't know. Even over the next 3 years or 5 years, I can't promise you that you'll make money. So the stock market is not a place you want to be in over the short term. And short term, I've kind of defined as about 5 years. If you can't hang on at least 5 years, don't mess with these things because they are hazardous to your financial health. You just don't know. Nobody knows. Even the best money manager does not know what's going to be happening in the short term for these guys. On the other hand, stocks, mutual funds, index funds are predictable and profitable over the long term. So as you begin to get in for 5 years, or better yet 10 years, or better yet 30 years, stocks can become your best friend and mutual funds for your investing life. These things will outperform just about, in fact, I think it will outperform any other type of investment you can think of. And that includes all the ones I've got here. It includes other things I didn't list, like real estate. It'll outperform gold, anything else like that. Mutual funds and stocks over the long term will be the best way to make money. So don't mess with them in the short term, but do get involved over the long term. Let me show you this chart. We looked at this last week, but I just want to show you those two things graphically. The risk of stocks and also the predictability of stocks. This is what the stock market returned from 1926 to 2006, about 81 years there, every single year. So if you had owned an index fund, for instance, that had the whole stock market in it, then this is what you would have gotten. So in 1926, you would have done about somewhere in the neighborhood of about 17% or so. Not bad at all. And you have a couple of great years here, 40% and more. Those are awesome returns. Followed by the Great Depression right in here, where everything just went down and people lost money big. That's kind of ancient history over here. But over here, this is the tech boom and the tech bust, which some of you guys may remember, or at least maybe your parents were talking about it at the time. This is a time when a lot of people, including myself, started investing. There were five great years here, people were making money hand over fist. People who'd never invested before decided, I want some of that. They got into the market. And then in 2001, or 2000, it went down. 2001 was even worse. And then in 2002, the bottom fell out of the market. People lost money big. A lot of people got out at that point. Then in 2003, it shot right back up, and all those people missed the returns of 2003 if they had gotten out at that time. Unpredictability. Nobody saw that coming. I mean, some people worried that it was going to happen, but nobody knew when it was going to happen. And when everything went south, very few people were ready for it, including myself. I lost a lot of money in those years as well. So over the short term, the stock market is not predictable. Nobody knows if it's going to be a great year. 2008, where is it going to be on this chart? Even 2007, is it going to be somewhere around here? Is it going to be down here? I don't know. Nobody knows. But let's look at it a little differently. This is 1 year, every year. What if we took it and said, let's invest for 3 years? Okay, so we're going to see what happens if we invest from 1926 to 1928. 3 year window. And then maybe 1927 to 1929. 3 year window, and we'll just slide that 3 year window along this whole chart and see what happens. Now, before I do that, look at this up here. 58 years, 23 years, up and down years. That is to say that you had about a 3 in 4 chance of making money on any given year, but you had more than 1 out of 4 chances of losing money. That's decent odds, I guess, but still good chance that you might lose money over 1 year. How about over 3 years? All right, for any given 3 year window, you had almost a 90% chance of making money. So your chances of losing money by staying in just 3 years instead of 1 year have gone up quite a bit. Now, the worst period is minus 25. Back here on this one, it was minus 43. That was a terrible year right here. But if you had hung on for any of those 3 years, your worst would have been quite a bit better, and the best would have gone down as well. It's starting to, the best and the worst are starting to approach each other. They're going to meet in the middle eventually. Let's go to 5 years instead of three. Five is sort of the minimum that I think you would want to be involved in the stock market. At this point, out of 81 years, there are only six periods of 5 years that were down. One of them did happen to be over here in the tech bust, but even if you had chosen a really bad time to get in, if you hung on to it for 5 years, then it wouldn't have been too bad for you. That's not a very big drop at all. How about 10 years? If you invest for 10 years, what's going to happen? At 10 years, something really nice happens. There were no periods whatsoever in United States history where if you invested for 10 years, that you would have lost money. It's never happened. So even if you chose the absolute worst time to be in the market, maybe you were in the Great Depression, or maybe you started investing over here right before the stock market plummeted, if you had been in and just hung on for 10 years, you would have guaranteed that at least you would have made 2.5%. That's the worst it ever did over here. And you might have done as well as 21%. But you wouldn't have lost any money. So you see, as we're making our window of time longer and longer, the chances of making money in the stock market are getting better and better, at least historically speaking. David, yes, sir?
The percentages that you're showing, the 21 and the 2.5, mm-hmm. is that like an average for the year?
Yes, that's right. You would make 21% a year on average for 10 years, not the combined total of 10 years. That would be bad, like divided up in 10. Yeah, I know. That would be bad if you had to divide it by 10. No, in this case, it would be, on average, 21% a year. Yes, sir?
Just a comment, too. Since 1983, we had our guide just give us a summary of what, and we had some 20-some percent years where we were up in mutual funds, but we had some where we were minus 3 and minus 5, but over the course of 25 years, it was 10%.
Mm-hmm. 10%. Mm-hmm.
So that bears out. The importance of long term.
Right. Just learning to stick with it even when you've got some really bad years and just hanging on. That's the way to make money, just by hanging on. And you see here, I mean, we've got some periods of some really good ups. Here's a big dip down, a good up here. But That's 10 years. Let's look at 20 years here. All right, here's that same up and down here, but you see the big, you know, ups and downs are starting to temper even more. The wave is not nearly quite as big as it was. Again, if you'd been in for 20 years, you would have done no worse than about 6%. Might have done as well as 18. And again, there's no down years. Here's 30 years. You see the ups and downs are almost gone at this point. And here's 40 years. That's the last one. 40 years is going to be about the amount of time that you guys will have to invest until retirement. And you can keep investing after retirement, of course, but if you were to retire around age 65 or 70, you would be in for about 40, 45 years. So you see, the best and worst have really come together here. The stock market is going to average around 12% if we look at all that history. And no matter what year you picked, no matter what periods of time, whether it's the Great Depression, the tech bust, the stock market crash in 1987, even if you did absolutely terrible job of picking the time you got in, if you held on for 40 years, you did quite well. So, stocks and mutual funds are unpredictable in the short term. In the long term, historically speaking, it's a very good investment. Now, I say historically speaking because nobody knows what's going to happen in the next 40 years or 50 years. Things may happen to our country. God may render judgment on our nation, for instance, that would just cause our economy to go in the toilet. We'd be in big trouble. God may bless our nation. We don't know. It's very hard to say that this is going to be repeated again. All we can do is look back and say, at least I know that going back 80 years or so, investments, mutual funds and all, have been a good bet. And people have made money if they just stuck with it. So, that is it for that. What is next on here? All right, the types of investment accounts. There's generally two of these, two ways that you can get accounts. One account would be one that has no tax advantages with it at all. This would be kind of like a savings account. Well, I mean, a savings account is similar in that if you have money in there, and let's say you make $50 of interest on your savings account or in your mutual fund, you're going to get taxed at the end of the year when you fill out your tax forms in April. You will be taxed on that interest you made, on that $50. You're going to have to pay the IRS some of that. So most people who invest in the country don't do it that way. I mean, plenty of people do, but most people will invest in an account that does have tax advantages. And the most popular way of doing that is to invest in a retirement account. This is how most people in this nation are going to invest, because it's going to be a very easy way for them to get into it, and there's going to be some tax breaks as well. With a 401k, that's something that is offered by companies that you may go to work for. They may say, hey, we've got a retirement plan, it's a 401k, would you like to join? And you can say, yeah, sure, I'd like to do that. An IRA is something that you will set up yourself if you would like, an individual retirement account if you don't have an opportunity to invest at work. But all three of these are going to, and I won't go into all the details, but all three of these will have tax advantages, whether it's up front or at the back when you retire and pull your money out. The government is not going to tax you on either money that you're putting in or on the earnings that you made during that whole time that you invested. So these are excellent ways to invest. They're fairly easy to set up, and they come with a lot of benefits. And I will say one more thing about this 401k. A lot of companies who offer 401ks will also offer you free money just for participating in it. And the way it will work is that if you sign up with your company's 401k and you say, I'm going to put in $100 this month, the company might say, okay, we're going to put in $50. We're going to put in half of what you put in. And then, just like magic, you now have $150. You just made 50% return on your investment of $100, and you didn't even do anything. Company just gave you free money. Now, they won't do that, you know, if you put in $10,000, they're not going to put in $5,000. There will be a limit at which they will stop matching what you put in. But that is absolutely free money for you to have. And a lot of companies that offer 401ks do that. So if your company has a 401k, I definitely encourage you to get involved. That's going to be the first take-home point of today. If you forget everything else that I say today, try to remember at least, if you're working full-time or if you're going to be getting a full-time job sometime, see if there's a retirement plan at your company and get started with it now while you're young. And if they give you free money, then take as much of it as they will give you. Definitely. Definitely. All right.
Security. Why would you do a retirement account?
If they're Social Security?
Yeah, I mean, we have a Social Security program now where people make money.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of their retirement at what, age 62 or 65?
Yeah, it's a sliding scale.
Why would you do your own individual retirement account? Why is it that they set these things up?
Well, Social Security has been around for a long time, and it does pay people who have retired now or at that age a certain amount of money. The amount of money they give you is nice to have. It's probably not going to pay for your retirement over the final 30 years or so of your life. And there's a very good chance that Social Security will be greatly reduced or maybe even non-existent, probably not non-existent, but may not exist by the time you guys are ready to retire or I'm ready to retire. I mean, Jack's pretty much ready to retire. But I'm sorry. But Social Security will be there for Jack.
Yeah, that's
but
right.
But it may not be there for us. So I don't concentrate on Social Security a whole lot when I'm thinking about my own personal retirement, because I just don't know if it's going to be there or not. Liz?
I was just going to say, like the system could like go bankrupt.
There are I think this week or last week, the first ever baby boomer, you know, someone born in the 40s or so, has just retired, just started collecting her first Social Security check. And that is going to be the first one of a huge group, the baby boomers, who are going to be suddenly pulling money out of that Social Security system. Now, they don't pull out money that they've put in. You know, they put in money. It's not like it goes into a secret account that they can pull out now. They put in money, basically, they are taking money out that I am putting in right now. So my paycheck, yours, anyone else who has a paycheck, we're funding those guys. The idea is that our children later will fund us. Problem is, if you don't have enough people funding a huge amount of people who need money, there you run out of money. So, yep.
It's pretty amazing. Jack probably gets this too, but about once a year, the government sends us a list of, some of you guys might get too, how much you paid into it and how much you'll get back. And it isn't real substantial. I mean, how much we put in is amazing. You think if you put it in, yeah, put it in this investment, how much money you'd have would be unbelievable. I mean, you could live really well. But I think it's surprising how little you get back.
Mm-hmm. I would be happy to make a deal with the government where I promise not to take any money out of Social Security if they will let me stop contributing. And then I could invest and do much better than what I would get. But they're not gonna give me that. That's right. I'm gonna campaign that right now. All right. One other concept that is good to know when you are investing is asset allocation. This is also called don't put all your eggs in one basket. There are lots of different ways that you can invest, lots of different types of things, even in terms of stocks and mutual funds. And I will show you how that's going to work with this beautiful, beautiful chart. This is, I know, isn't it great? I made this too. It took me a while. But a lot of copy and pasting in Photoshop. It wasn't too bad. But all right, so here's how it works. This is 92 to 2006, 15 years, and what we see up here at the top is the category of stocks that did the best that year. So up here, small cap value, international did really well in 93. Down here at the bottom is a list of the types of stocks and things that did really badly, the worst possible choices for that year. Okay, so... And we talked about value, right? We talked about growth stocks, the difference between those two. Small cap just means small companies. Large cap, large companies, your Microsofts and IBMs, General Motors. That's what those different kind of categories are. International is everything from Europe to the Far East, Pacific Rim, that kind of thing. Let me show you just a couple of these or a few of these highlighted here. Let's say you were down here in large cap growth and you decided, oh, this is a dog. It's in the basement. It's done terrible for 2 years in a row. I'm getting out of these things. Well, very next year it shot up to here. Then for 4 years it was on top and then still right here. This was a great segment of the market to be in. And then back here it was down in the basement again. And it was there. It's been there ever since for about 7 or 8 years. This is not coincidentally, about the time of the tech boom, when a lot of big companies like Cisco and Intel were making money hand over fist, and then they plummeted, and they've been down for a long time. People who were in this and thought, I'm going to stick with it, I'm going to put all my money in large cap growth, really suffered down here. People who decided to get out over here had the same thing. They missed that big rebound. So that's large cap. Here's small cap values. These are all over the place. You know, really poor performers down here, followed by 2 years of being the best performers, absolutely the best, and then up and down, and who knows where these things are going to be. International is even more over the map. It goes from worst to best to best to worst. Pretty good. Well, not so good. Worst. Back a little, down, worst. And then a couple of years here, it's the best again. International stuff is pretty volatile too, and those people who thought that's where things are going to be happening in 94 or so were really disappointed down here. Here are bonds. Bonds, you remember we talked about last week, are near the bottom of our pyramid. Not that risky, but also they don't do that well. They are generally down here, not very well performing, except during the tech bust in our lifetime, when almost all stocks were down. They were down so badly that bonds turned out to be a great investment. Now, a lot of people got into bonds, and they said, I can't take this stock market anymore. Give me some bonds. Those things are safe. They were, but in 2003, when the stock market recovered, bonds went right back down to the basement. People missed out on a lot of growth that they could have had if they were up here. So that is what happens when you cherry pick and decide, I'm going to figure out what did really well last year and I'm going to invest in that. It doesn't work. They bounce up and down. This is a diverse portfolio. This is one where somebody has chosen to have large cap, small cap stocks. They have growth. They have some value. They've got some international in as well. They've got bonds. They've got a good mix of all of these things. You're never going to be on top with these, but you're never going to be at the bottom either. This kind of looks like that stock market chart, right? The stock market was going up and down like that, but over time, the stock market was a much smoother ride. And that's what this is going to be. A diverse portfolio will still give you really, really good returns on your money, but they will take a lot of the stress out of it, too. The ups are not going to be quite as high. The downs are not going to be nearly as low. It's a much smoother path to take. So, let's look at it this way. Let's say you took $10,000 and put it in the market every year for 15 years. $150,000 you've invested, you're putting in $10,000 every year over those years we just looked at. Here's one guy who did it. After 15 years, ups and downs, he's made $368,000. Now you notice I didn't tell you what he invested in. He just did something, and he made $368,000. Here's another guy who did the same thing, took the same amount of money for the same time. He only made $331,000. He missed out on $36,000 that his friend had made, even though they both started from the same place. What did these guys invest in that made the difference? Well, the guy in blue had the diversified portfolio. He had a good mix of stocks and bonds, growth, large cap, small cap value. That's how he turned out. The guy in red picked whatever had done really well last year and invested in that, right? So in 1998, let's say 1999, no, let's not. Let's do this. 1994, that guy, let's say he said, international, that was great. It's 1995 now. I'm going to put my money in international stocks. Well, he was down here while his diversified guy was here. Now, sometimes he did really well, right? If he chose to do this, next year he made it big, pretty good here. But then, you know, he was down here while the diverse guy was here. So by trying to pick whatever did really well last year, he lost a lot of money. It would have been better just for him to keep that smooth, easy ride of a diverse portfolio. He would have actually made more money doing that. So don't put all your eggs in one basket, because nobody knows which one is going to be on top next year. All right. So this is, does anyone have any questions about any of that? Because I'm going to transition now and talk about actually giving some recommendations about what to invest in. We've been talking for about, 70, 80 minutes total now, and I haven't actually told you what to buy. And I will again give you the disclaimer that this, what I'm going to show you, is going to be my personal opinion on investing. You ask 10 different people in our church and you will get 10 different ways of investing your money, 10 different ideas of what you should buy and how you should do it. This is just going to be my opinion. This is actually what I do for myself, how my views have changed over the 10 years or so that I've been investing. I think it's a reasonable way of doing it, so you are free to take my advice if you like, or take other people's advice. There's no single one right answer to how to do this. I'm just going to give you my opinion because I'm teaching the class. If anyone has any questions, then tough. I really like index funds. Index funds are great. You've got your stocks, you've got your mutual funds. Index funds are a type of mutual fund, and I happen to really like them a lot. And there's several reasons that I think index funds are a really good way to invest. Index funds, in a very unexpected way, I think, will actually beat most actively managed mutual funds. Sometimes it's, they beat 50 or 60% of them, sometimes up to 80 to 90% of them. Now that seems counterintuitive. You think, you've got a professional here. He's going to be looking at what to buy and sell. He knows what he's doing. He's watching the market. He's going to make the right decisions that following this index can't do. He's going to have a leg up on the competition. It turns out it's just not true. Most mutual fund companies with their professional managers cannot outperform what an index fund does. I don't know why exactly, but there will always be some that do. You will have some funds that do better than, say, the S&P 500, but those funds are going to change as well. So the 10% that beat the index this year are going to be a different 10% than what beat the index last year. So index funds often let you, you won't beat the market with the index fund, right? Because you're just buying the market. But you will beat most other mutual funds by getting an index fund. In addition to that, index funds are actually cheaper to own. So you've got this money manager who's buying and selling stuff. He's making decisions. He's got a staff, a group of people who are working for him. All of that costs money. He costs money. And those expenses are going to be passed on to you, the mutual fund owner. So a typical mutual fund might charge you about 1 to 2, maybe even 3% for expenses. So that means if your mutual fund made 10% this year, they're going to knock off 1 to 3% of that return. And you're actually going to be have your amount reduced by that amount. Now you've only made 7 to 9% because that amount got taken by the mutual fund company as expenses. 1 to 3%. Typical index fund will charge you about 0.5%, maybe lower. Some of the best companies do about 0.2%. So that's less money coming out off the top. So an index fund already has that built-in advantage. No manager, it's run by a computer, it's just cheaper to do. Index funds have low turnover rates. See, a manager is going to be buying and selling stocks all the time. He may be, if you have the David White Mutual Fund share, then I'm the manager, and you've got your share, but you don't know what's in my company maybe on a day-to-day basis. Today I might have 10 stocks, tomorrow I might have 12, then maybe I'm going to sell all those because I don't like them, I'm going to buy another 20. I'm constantly buying and selling, and all of that costs money. It costs money if you and I want to do it, going to a stockbroker. It's going to cost our mutual fund manager money to buy and sell stocks as well. He's going to pay taxes on them as well when he sells them. Those taxes get passed on to you. Index fund, when it buys its stocks, like the Dow Jones stocks, it doesn't have to buy and sell all the time, right? It's already bought the stocks it needs. So it's not going to be turning over very much. It's going to be cheaper that way. Index funds also don't rely on having a really, really smart guy running the show. And there have been some really good fund managers in the past. Peter Lynch was one, and he ran a fund called the Magellan Fund at Fidelity. That fund did really, really well. Over the years, it beat the S&P 500 consistently. He was awesome. Then he retired. And when he left, the fund stayed on, and your shares were still in your pockets. But now, a new guy is running it. Is he going to be as good as Peter Lynch was? Well, you know, maybe, maybe not. It's going to be kind of like, you know, when the Chicago Bulls. How are they going to be when Michael Jordan leaves? Well, they're still going to be a good team, probably, but a lot of the magic is gone. So an index fund is not going to have that problem. It doesn't have to rely on someone with the hot hands to know when to buy and sell. Last of all, index funds have a long, long track record to look at. I'll give you an example. Back in the 90s again, a lot of my extended family got into a mutual fund that was called the Janus Fund. And the Janus Fund in the late 90s was a superstar fund. It was doing great. It was getting returns of like 80%, 90%, unheard of things. And it did it for at least a couple of years. Unfortunately, it was heavily, heavily, almost exclusively invested in technology. And that was a great place to be in the late 90s. Come 2000, 2001, the Janus Fund sank like a stone. And most folks in my family lost a lot of money that way. If you had looked at the Janus Fund, you would have seen that even though it was getting some great returns, it had only been in existence for about 2 years. There was no way to go back and say, well, how good has this fund been over 10 years, maybe 20 years? It hadn't existed that long. An index fund that tracks the stock market has a history going back, like we saw, about 80 years. You can see how it's done in the up markets, in the downs, in wars, in peacetime. That is really good information to have when you're deciding what you're going to invest in. You want something that's going to be a proven performer over the long period. So, that is why I really like index funds. I think for a long time, I invested pretty much exclusively in a fund. I had the S&P 500 fund for a long time. After that, I switched. I had a fund that owned pretty much the entire stock market. It was called the Total Stock Market Index Fund. It had about 10,000 stocks in this one mutual fund. So I owned the entire stock market. And that was fair. That was pretty diverse, right? You had big, small companies, everything. That's what I did most of my investing in. Now, I invest slightly differently now. Let's see, where are we on time? I now invest in something that are called target funds for myself. Target mutual funds are great as well, especially if you don't have a whole lot of interest in the stock market. If you don't want to be messing a whole lot with trying to figure out returns, what are you people laughing for? You should all be interested in the stock market, but we're not. I'm not all that interested. I mean, I like investing, but I don't really have the time or inclination to follow my fund managers and market conditions and all, and asset allocation even, to figure out if I'm on track. Target funds are really nice for this kind of thing. Here's how they work. Target funds will have a particular year as their goal. So let's say it's going to be the year that you're going to retire. Target funds are often used for retirement. So you guys are, you know, well, let's see. So target funds are going to start off by being very aggressive. They're going to be loaded up with stocks, you know, high risk type things. And then as you get older and get closer and closer to that retirement date, it's going to get more and more conservative automatically. So you guys are around 20 years old or so. Let's say you're going to retire somewhere in the neighborhood of 2050 to 2055, the year 2050 or so. So let's look at a target 2050 fund. And I kind of made this one up, but this is what a lot of them would look like. So you buy the target 2050 fund. In 2010, this is what it's going to look like. About 90% of what it has in it is going to be stocks, those things that are going to make the most money over time. Just to be safe, to kind of balance things out. It's going to have about 10% bonds or so, a little tiny bit of cash. Cash is pretty much the same as us having a money market or a savings account. It's just there for a little tiny bit of stability. Most of it's in stocks, though, and that's where you want it.
And are these index funds, this pool of stocks?
Some of them will be. Mm-hmm. Some of them will be. Depending on the fund and who you buy it from, the contents of these stocks may be made up of index funds or may be made up of individual stocks. It's going to just depend on that fund. And I'll mention that briefly in just a few minutes. 2020, you see it's getting a little bit more bonds in there. Here's 2030, 2040. Finally, 2050, you're about ready to retire. Now, there's still a lot of stocks in there, which is still appropriate because you've retired. You've hit age 65, but chances are, if God gives you a normal lifetime, you've got another 20 or so years before, you know, more before you're going to die. So it's going to happen, I'm sorry to tell you, eventually. But you still have a pretty good amount of time for those stocks to go up and down. But yet, you're retiring. You need money now. That's why there's a lot of bonds in there. I'm just going to cut that part out of the audio, right? I'm sorry to bring in death into this. But so by the time you get to retirement, it's going to be much more conservative. And the nice thing is that you haven't had to do anything during this time. And this is pretty much how I am investing these days, for the most part. I have it set up where I just send some money to my target fund. I've chosen the Target 2045 fund for myself because I like it a little bit. 2040 would be kind of appropriate for me in terms of age, but I like mine a little more aggressive, so I got 2045 instead. I just send money to them, and over the years, they will automatically adjust what's in there for me. It is a very nice autopilot way of investing if you don't want to have to think about this kind of thing. So, target funds are really nice for that. So, buying mutual funds. The question is then, what do you buy? There's over 8,000 mutual funds out there. All of them want your money. Which ones should you get? My personal recommendation is that you consider buying index funds or targeted funds. Index funds will generally beat other things. They're good to have. Targeted funds are good for people who just don't want to mess with stuff. Where should you buy them? There's hundreds of places to go. You don't buy a mutual fund from your bank, necessarily, but there are plenty of companies that are easy to get to from over the internet or elsewhere to sign up, get an account, and buy a mutual fund. Which ones should you use? Again, this is just my personal recommendation, but I would suggest you consider one of these three excellent, excellent companies: Vanguard, Fidelity, and T. Rowe Price. Of the hundreds of companies out there, these are probably some of the best, and especially Vanguard and Fidelity. I do most of my stuff with Vanguard. They are the company that more or less invented index funds. That is what most of their business is now. Vanguard is the one that has my target retirement fund, and it is made up entirely of index funds, right? So for the bond part of my target fund, it's the Vanguard index fund for bonds. For stocks, they've got an index fund for American stocks, an index fund for European stocks, some Asian stocks. I like that. By having index funds in the target fund, that's why I like Vanguard. But any of these three companies are good choices to give your money to. So, I will wrap it up with this: how to invest. A few don'ts. Don't start investing before you've paid off your credit card debt. Remember that? Credit cards that are going to charge us 18%, 20%, 30%. Now, the stock market over time is only going to make you about 10 to 12%. So paying off those credit card debts is a better investment for you to start off with. Don't mess with individual stocks unless you know what you're doing. That's just my suggestion for you. Keeping up with Google and knowing what its business is and how it's doing in the market, its prospects, that's a lot of work. You can do it, and there's some people who love that kind of thing, but for starting out, I don't generally suggest buying individual stocks. stick with mutual funds, index funds to start off with, unless you really want to get into this, and then feel free, go for it. Don't panic. The market will go down. Remember, 1 out of 4 years pretty much was a down year. Stick with it in the long term, even in those down years, it will pay off in time. Do start early. You're being young right now is probably your best advantage. It's a big advantage over me and, you know, us other guys in here. You've got time to invest, time that I don't have anymore, time that you can let those returns get really, really big. Do use your company's retirement plan, especially if you've got a 401k that they're going to give you free money with. Take advantage of that, definitely. Even if you only put in the minimum required to get that money, as much as they will give you. Do make your investing regular and automatic. I have this done now so that money comes out of my paycheck automatically or out of my bank account automatically. I don't see it before it comes to me. I don't have to think about, well, I just don't think I can afford it this month. No, it goes. I don't have any say in it. Well, I don't really have, it's as if I don't have any say in it. It goes and it gets invested. That's the best way I found for me to do it. That's forced discipline. Do make sure your portfolio is diverse. Don't load up on just technology. Don't load up on just oil stocks right now. Don't load up on things that you think are hot because you don't know what it's going to be next year. Make your portfolio diverse. Consider buying index funds and target funds like we talked about. Consider buying from one of those three great companies that I mentioned. And whatever you end up buying, make sure that what you buy has a really long, successful track record. Index funds are good for that, but if you decide to go with a different mutual fund, look it up and see how it did over 10 years or more if it's been around that long. The longer a track record that you can look at, the better it's going to be. So that is it, you guys, for this class. Again, these are just my personal suggestions. You may get different advice from your parents or from others who have invested for a long time, but this is what I do now, and so far I'm pretty pleased with how it's going. So that is it. Next week we will be back to the Dave Ramsey videos. So if you've got your little books, then bring them with you. I think I've got one extra here if someone needs it next week. And we will pick up from there. You guys have any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
So in a 401k, you're going to have to use whatever company, you know, your company is going with. So like you recommended Vanguard, that might not be an option in the 401k. So you can do the 401k with your company, especially if they're doing the matching. But then on your own, have something else on the outside, maybe with one of these. Does that have to be set up as an IRA?
Yes.
Where you can't touch it for, like, let's say you wanted to do it for a 10-year period, okay, or you wanted to be able to pull it out anytime you.
Right. In that case, you would have to set up a non-tax advantaged standard brokerage account with Vanguard. So, yeah, you could do that. If I knew, for instance, I was going to buy a house in 10 years or whatever, maybe I would pick the Target 2020 fund. It's about 10 years or so from now, and I know that it's going to start somewhat aggressive and get a little more, it's going to be conservative by the time it gets to 2020. I might choose that fund. I wouldn't be able to have it in a retirement account. It would have to be just a traditional account. And then I would pay taxes on it as it makes money. But yeah, you could certainly do that. And you know, if you're not investing for retirement, that's a very good way to do it. And you're right, if you are investing for retirement, your company may have a 401k for you, but the company is going to choose what your investment choices are, right? You don't have 8,000 stocks to choose from. You have maybe 10 that your company has chosen for you. So if you don't really like those, then generally what people will do is invest a little bit so they can get that free money. Then they will go and open up an individual retirement account with Vanguard, maybe. And then if they have leftover money, they'll put it there. And then they can choose the funds that they get from Vanguard. So that's actually what I do as well. I put a little into my 401k, and then the rest of it I send to Vanguard because I like my Vanguard funds better. good. All right. I'll have some handouts for you at the door, just a couple of articles. You can ignore them if you want, but they're on index funds and target funds. I thought they were interesting, so. Bob, would you close us, please?
Lord, we thank you for the time we've had now, and Father, thank you for the things David is bringing to us. Again, our prayer is that that you would give us long work lives that we could save and invest in things of you, ultimately. Father, we pray that you'd help us to use the wisdom given to us here and, again, to be good stewards of all the gifts that you've given to us. Father, bless us in this aspect of our lives, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you all.